Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast, where two mental health therapists and a fitness coach explore the interweaving connections of mind, body, and spirit. Every episode covers an area of this connection and how we can reimagine ourselves and our world when we see these connections more clearly.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining us for another episode of Reconceive. Today we're continuing our discussion on spirituality and religion and how it can help and heal. And we are so excited to have with us today in the studio our friend Lisa Zibel, who is a shaman practicing here in Springfield, Missouri. Her business is called Oneness Now, and she works with groups, individuals, businesses. Thank you, Lisa, for joining us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what that means to be a practicing shaman?
Sure. So if we look at shamanism, a lot of times we consider that to be coming from a Native American perspective, especially as Americans. Mm-hmm. So shamanism, as a generalization, is earth-based. It's about gratitude for being in the physical, gratitude for Mother Earth, and seeing everything in the physical world as divinity, okay, and honoring it. And reciprocity is a big part of that. With shamanism, it's also about, so it's that connection with Mother Earth, but connection with the heavens, and knowing that we are responsible and accountable for creating our lives. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Do you have any questions so far?
I do. So many.
I'll stop right there.
How did you come into finding shamanism? So, or working with shamanism?
So, you know how they always say that you start your spiritual path, or a lot of people say that you start your spiritual path out of desperation or inspiration. So mine was desperation. I was really sick in a way that I had severe migraines. I had chronic fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. I was being like labeled with all these things. And, you know, after a year or whatever of having tests and finally nothing, you know, they couldn't say, well, we don't know why this is happening because physiologically you look perfect. It's like, at that point, you got to look in the mirror and go, this is your problem.
Yeah.
This is your problem. So what are you going to do about it? So I chose that path. And that's when I actually started looking at yoga. That's how it really started, is yoga and looking at chakras, Ayurvedic medicine. Mm-hmm. I started, yeast has a way of mimicking a lot of disease states. So there's a book called The Yeast Connection for Women. And I did that cleanse, which was bare bones and lost weight and did a huge detox and found out that there were certain foods that my body just didn't really care for. So as that started, then I was introduced to a shaman here in town, did some work with him, and started figuring out that, wow, I have all these natural talents for energy. And I started, you know, releasing a lot of wounding. And then some things happened, and I found out that that shaman was a shadow shaman, and that's when Karen Duncan came into my life and started working with her. And that's really where the journey shifted into more of a personal empowerment, moving into the cosmology of coming into a connection with Mother Earth, because I have always been one of those people that's kind of airy-fairy. I was way up here. I was not grounded, you know. And that especially happened as I got older. You know, as little kids, we're playing in the dirt. And, you know, we can keep that connection. But then we get older and go to school. And then we just forget about it, right?
Yeah.
And at least I did. Not everybody does. And so Karen Duncan invited me on this journey under the auspices of Divine Feminine in 2010. And it turned into a 7-year journey. And it was, I don't know, I think I lived 15 lifetimes in that lifetime, but she and another woman, Judy Bath, were the co-leaders of that journey. And of course, when we started it, we didn't know it was going to be a 7-year journey. It morphed into that. We just thought it was 1 year. So it was a little shocking when we met with the Apus and the Santa Tierras, which are the land angels in Peru, because that land is alive. And they said, so are you ready to commit to a 7-year journey of the divine feminine? And all of us, thank God it was a pitch black room, because I think all of us, our sphincters tightened up. So, and we were all like, oh, mother of God, what are we going to do now? We can't tell the angels no, but oh, can we? And I would imagine Karen and Judy were feeling the same way. So that's when, you know, we made the commitment.
7 years is a long time.
It is a huge commitment, because it was monthly conference calls. Okay. And then we met once a year
in Peru.
November. No.
Okay.
So we were in Peru every year around May. We started in July and then it ended up morphing into May. And then we would meet as a group in November, wherever, because we were from all over the United States and Canada. So we had to figure out locations where everybody could come. And then we would talk about what we learned in Peru, just like we did in the conference calls, but also end up doing a lot of cleansing, a lot of ceremony, a lot of embodiment of the work that we were being taught by the Ultima Psychs and the Pampa Messiah shamans there in Peru.
So there are a number of words that you're using that I want to clarify. You just used another one, cleansing, but you also said releasing. Can you say something about releasing and cleansing?
Sure. So, for us to step into more of our divine expression, we have to be able to release this old wounding, you know, from childhood, from other lifetimes, from even our lineage. And, you know, because we all come in with this agreement of I'm unworthy, right? So we've got all this inherent programming, all these programs of unworthiness, of I'm not good enough, you know, I'm a screw up. I mean, all this kind of stuff. And so in order for us to step more into our divine expression, we have to let go of those ideas because they're false.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not real.
Yeah.
And so by releasing and setting the releasing of that wounding, trauma, damage, you, and then making the intention of I'm stepping into love and joy, empowerment, my own divine expression, my own divinity. Then you are coming into a deeper level of consciousness of your own self-worth, so that you can actually like find joy even when you're in a traffic jam that hasn't moved for 2 hours. You can find joy when somebody, you know, is, you see a homeless person or whatever, you know what I mean? Or you can feel love for that person that's having a meltdown in front of you.
Because it all connects you with your higher being.
Yeah, your higher self. Yeah. I mean, everybody has a different way of saying it, but your oversoul, your soul, your spirit, your higher self. I mean, however, your super ego depends on, you know, your background as far as how you
So from your perspective, where does the programming come from? Right, because, you know, Deborah and I's world, we're in the therapy world. And so for us, we would say that comes from woundings that we've experienced here in this lifetime.
As children.
Sure. Right. But it sounds like you're saying that it can even go beyond that we can actually come into this lifetime with wounding already programmed into us. Can you talk a little more about that?
Oh, gosh. So...
You know, a real easy question for you.
I know. It's like, wow.
I feel like I'm sitting bull right here.
Right, I know.
So there is, I call it karmic patterning. And I'm pretty sure whenever we've done gateways with the Ascended Masters, with John Schulte, who I mentioned to you guys earlier, it's like this... It's always about unworthiness, but it's a patterning that is held at the genetic level, mm-hmm. at the cellular level. Mm-hmm. And so it follows us until we are in a place that it's able to come up,
right.
and be released. Because you can only release whatever is ready to be released at that time. Mm-hmm. The way they describe it to me is you've got a glass of water, okay? And it's filled with pebbles. And then you fill it with smaller pebbles. And then you fill it with grains of sand, mm-hmm. okay? And the water is your divinity. And all the pebbles and all the sand, that's all the little wounding. Whether it's happened in other lifetimes, in your ancestral, your physical ancestral patterning. Mm-hmm. And so whenever something's ready to come up, whenever something's ready to be released, you take that little piece of sand and it comes out. And then you have more water, right? Mm-hmm. More of your divine expression is available, mm-hmm. for you.
Okay.
So by just allowing yourself to release that crappy feeling that you're having at that moment, or anger or sadness, mm-hmm. or however it's presenting itself.
Right. Or sometimes we'll go to therapy and actually go after one of the stones.
Exactly.
And remove a huge chunk.
Exactly.
And it sounds like one of those stones could be my dad's stone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Stuff that happened to him when he was a kid.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or even
and also, right.
more distant ancestor.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because, you know, whenever, like, we're doing a healing session, or if you're doing a healing session, you know, you can go 15 generations back where this trauma happened,
yeah.
of abuse.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and so you heal that lineage and you bring that forward into the person's DNA, RNA, and clean that up, and then reset the programming that I am worthy, I am empowered, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So you can, so it's like a computer, right?
Right.
So we're coming in already fully loaded as I'm unworthy, because we're choosing to have the experience of these polarities, mm-hmm. of hot and cold, mm-hmm. of happiness and sadness. You know, when we're in spirit, we're like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I'm going back. I'm going back into the physical. Will you be my friend? I want you to be my really mean mom, except I don't consider you to be mean, but I want you to make me feel like I'm a jerk and that I don't, and that I'm not smart. I'm so excited. Will you do this for me, please? And then you go to this person, this other divine being, and go, will you be my dad? And I want to be daddy's girl here. And I want this to happen and that to happen, right? And so you have all these spirits that you all come together and you're like, oh my God, this is so exciting. We're going to go into physical. We're going to have so much fun, right? Then we come into physical and it's like, we forgot that we're divine. We're unworthy.
We
right. asked for this. And we're like, I really can't stand my mom.
So why would we ask for that?
Well, because when we're in spirit, all we know is joy, right? All we know is love.
Yeah.
So in order to actually have those experiences, what does it feel like to feel angsty, to feel anger?
We want that.
We do because that expands ourselves.
Right. There's an element of evolution about it.
Yes.
In order to evolve, we have to
And we find it fascinating. Okay. When we're in spirit, we can't taste chocolate. We don't know what it's like to have an orgasm. So it's just like, how wonderful. We also don't know what it's like to, you know, smell a dead carcass or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, so it's the whole, I mean, this is a playground of sensuality.
We want the whole
thing. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we just love coming into it. So we make all these agreements with everybody going, I want to do this, I want to do that. And most of the people, you know, that we're running into or interacting with, we've had other lifetimes mm-hmm. with. So, you know, there's those people that you'll meet them for the first time and you may just think, oh my God, you're the cat's meow. And then there's other people, it's like, I never want to see that person again. Mm-hmm. Well, more than likely,
there's a reason.
You've got some karmic patterning going on with that person, right?
This is reminding me of something that's way going to oversimplify it, but maybe that's okay. It reminds me of the same reason why we love to watch really sad movies and we love to watch really scary movies. In a very condensed way, we get to experience emotion in a really powerful way that we wouldn't necessarily be able to in our real life, right?
Sure.
So we actually seek out stories and seek out things so that we can experience something that we would never be able to in our actual lifetime right now. And what you're talking about is that on the divine level, the, you know, exponentially larger level. Mm-hmm. But that seems to be a human thing, that we actually seek out all kinds of diverse experience, not necessarily positive ones. We like the positive ones, but we're also so curious about the hard stuff, the negative stuff. Why do we push ourselves to do those things? To be human is to be curious about that. And I think what you're saying is to be divine is to be curious about that as well, and to crave that kind of new experience and that new way of experiencing that we wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Because it's full of contrast for
us. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And when we're in spirit, there's no contrast. There's only love.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds awesome.
It does, especially when you're in the physical and you're striving for it every day and it's like, God, why did I do this to myself? Uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. So.
But maybe that's the thing that little kids pick up on about how boring it might be in heaven or something. Uh-huh. That idea.
They're super concerned about
it. Going to sit on a cloud and play the harp and be just pure light.
And sing the same songs every day.
Yeah.
I'm not going to eat peach pie and then feel drunk the next morning. I'm not going to have that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you know, with little kids, I mean, they're so filled with source energy, with God energy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just everything is wonder and curiosity for them. I mean, they come in with some programming, right? Some tribal programming of the family and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's all the controlling things as adults and all the signals they get from society as far as this is appropriate behavior, mm-hmm, this is inappropriate
right.
behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so then they start shifting and they can either shift into this expandedness of themselves or they can shrink. And most of the time they end up shrinking, you know, just because of all the different signals that they're getting. And children are highly, highly energetic.
Yeah.
They're just like animals, like dogs. You can say, I love you, but if your energy is saying something different, they will.
They know.
Yeah. And they will. Your words don't mean anything
mm-hmm.
to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So with children, it's imperative that your energy and your words are
aligned.
You can't
fake it with them.
No.
Yeah.
So for Melissa and I, who have young baby girls, mm-hmm. say, going back to that ancestry, if Melissa and I were to unpack some of our stones from our glasses before our babies are born, have we then set forth a different DNA patterning for them, for
you
their
probably
future?
Probably have, yeah. I've never really thought about it, but I would imagine, yeah.
Right. So here's the funny thing. The sciencey way of explaining this is about epigenetics. Right, mm-hmm. that we have the ability to turn off and on certain genes depending on our learning. So we can come in to this life with the programming for an anxiety disorder, a depressive disorder, etc. But if we are diligent about that and learn how to manage it, but even go beyond managing and learn how to heal it on some level, mm-hmm. when we then go to have kids, they actually come with that gene not turned on. The way they figured this out was following the generations post-Holocaust.
Yeah.
So there was whole generations of kids that were born with the epigenetics turned on for depression, anxiety. Mm-hmm. None of them were spared, obviously. We would expect nothing less than that. And so as they followed the generations, what they've watched is there is now some resolution for that. But even all these generations later, they proportionately have so much more of that in their culture, in their lineage, mm-hmm. Than they did before.
Same with Native Americans.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think to me, that was a really hopeful thing,
right? That when I do my work and change my genetic patterning, I then actually pass that on in a different expression, right? The possibility of it is still there, but it doesn't come in awake. It doesn't come in, you know, alive and ready to go in the same way. And that was really encouraging when I started thinking about having kids, because I knew that, you know, my lineage had all kinds of nonsense woken up in it. Well,
and also, so with shamanism, it's always working at the energetic. So you've got four levels of engagement. You've got the literal, the symbolic, the mythic, and the energetic. Mm-hmm. And so that's the beauty of the coming from the shamanic perspective, because the energy is a lot easier to move and release than if you're working at the literal level, which is like affirmations and that kind of thing. I was going to say something about your kids, but I can't. So like I have young mothers as clients. And so as a part of doing any lineage work, in the cosmology that I practice, we do lots of ceremony with fire, with water, that kind of thing. And with fire, because they're your children, you can ask their spiritual support team and ask your own spiritual support team to come into this alignment of, I'm releasing this genetic patterning into the fire. You know, I'm choosing to step into more love, pretend, or more worthiness. I'm setting the intention that my children, if it's okay with their spiritual support team, because free will is number one priority, you never impose your will. If that is something that my children are able to receive or are willing to receive at the spiritual level, I'm setting that intention now, and thank you for your help with this. You know, so even if it's something later on, you can do that through fire or just by doing prayer, you know.
That makes sense.
So does that help?
Yes. But that sounds like, yes. Could you paint, for our listeners and for us who have not worked with a shaman, could you paint a picture of what that would look like, what that entails? If I come into a session with you, you know, we go to talk therapy, we maybe Deborah Melissa leads us through talk therapy, or we have some EMDR where we're doing some listening, some tactile. What does a shaman do with their client? Would you use the word client?
Okay. All right. So when a client comes in, you create sacred space, and that means I call in the angels and I create, it's kind of like a chi bubble where only love is allowed in.
Right.
And I only work with divine beings that honor free will. When you think about everything being divine, there are those beings that also don't honor free will. I personally don't want to be interacting with those.
Is that what you meant by shadow shaman earlier?
Yes.
I was going to ask.
They work
about
both
that.
Sides of the light. Great teaching experience. So you create sacred space, and then you kind of have a conversation with the client in the very beginning, and you're asking about, you know, what are they wanting to work on? Because in essence, you're setting an intention of what it is. And a lot of times it's coming up as a physical symptomology, or this keeps happening to me and I'd like to resolve it today. So I have a massage table. Everybody's fully clothed, whatever's comfortable. For those people that don't like to lay down, you can have them sit up. But for the most part, in my practice, I put them on a table. I use a lot of crystals. I also use some toning. And that's when I work with your spiritual support team. And they're telling me, okay, we're going to be working on this today. We're doing two past lives, and we're also going three generations back. She doesn't like to be told what to do. Well, this happened here and this happened here. So we're going to heal these lifetimes, this ancestor, and, you know, have them feel like they're worthy, actually change the programming so they're worthwhile. And so for me, I can look at somebody and I see what's happening in their field. I can see the blockages. I can see where, oh, that, and then there's layers and layers and layers. But for the most part, I'm just facilitating. A shaman is a facilitator, and anybody that tells you that they're doing it, I personally wouldn't go to.
Run with the wind.
So I'm just facilitating the process and listening to all the divine beings, the archangels, the ascended masters, your own spiritual support team, as they clue me in on, you know, we need to do some didgeridooing with this. This is going to break up that dense energy in the field. We're going to take out these crystallized energies. And what I mean by crystallized energies is that they look like arrows or maybe a 2x4. It could be a shackle, that kind of thing. And so they're doing the work. They're taking it out and filling it up with your own divine essence, with the appropriate healing energy. We use drumming, toning, a whistle, use more crystals because the crystals help to transmute the energy depending upon what it is.
Can you actually feel these beings or see these beings?
I am more of a sensory person, yeah. Kinesthetic person than I am a seeing. Every once in a while I can see, but I've always been more of a kinesthetic.
So it's different depending on, for every shaman, depending
on. Oh, yeah. Okay. Some people are very visual, you know, right. And others are just very kinesthetic like me. Mm-hmm. I feel lucky if I get one. I get a lot of images, but they're very quick.
Yeah.
Like if you were to ask me to read your aura, I could sense what your aura is and tell you, but I can't see that. Oh yeah, she's got the orange at the top of her mm-hmm. chakra, okay. The crown chakra, and she's got some red on this side and blue there. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And there are people that can do that.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
a lot more people that I've talked to, they are like you in that they're having a sensory perceptive experience rather than, you know, what we would normally describe as a visual mm. experience where they're seeing something in detail.
Yeah. 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 So then there is always this time of completion and where the work has been done. At the same time, the shaman should be tracking that we don't take you too far energetically because we want to be able to, whatever the work is, that you're able to integrate it easily so you can step into right. that new programming, that new way of being. And so then we bring you back into your physical body. We have a little conversation. Many times your divinity will give you a homework assignment. Like one could be a gratitude journal. One could be using your different senses and how do you nurture yourself and expanding that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a great exercise if you ever want to know how you nurture yourself and how you might be doing more of one than the other.
Types of nurturing. Yeah.
And that would but just come within, through that would, you, while you're interacting with these people.
Right. Yeah. They tell me. And then usually they're telling me, yeah, this past life was this or that. And, you know, this was what happened to that grandmother on the father's side. And, you know, depending upon the information, you know, you give a little bit of information so that the client understands what happened. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when somebody comes to see a shaman, this is someone who has chosen to consciously be on the path and to be a co-creator of their own life. Right. There are other ways of being on a spiritual path where there's not so much consciousness.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's probably why a lot of people don't see shamans.
Yeah. Traditional because religion would be more of that sort of I'm not in a co-creative.
No, it's always outside of yourself, isn't
it? Yeah.
Religion is always outside of yourself. And it's always, it seems to me, and I was raised Christian, but it seems to me that it just continues to reinforce my unworthiness. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in church and thinking, why am I such a bad person? I'm just a little kid. I don't know why. Why am I a sinner? I don't even know what that word is. And why is that big white guy with the beard? Why is he such a mean person? I don't get it. You know, I mean,
very similar thought. Yeah.
And of
I'm
course,
not a sinner.
I know.
I'm not a worm.
I'm just a little kid, man.
You guys had more fight about it than I did. I just accepted it.
Oh God.
Certainly,
so,
I must be.
You know, but there's nothing wrong with religion. At the same time, for a lot of people, it brings them solace. It provides community for them.
Yeah.
Some people like being told what to do. They like those rules. Mm-hmm. when you're choosing to go on your own spiritual path, it's one of coming into your own, looking inside of yourself, and it's really coming from that place of love. It could be that desperation started that path, which was fear-oriented, but really it's about loving yourself.
Mm-hmm. And no one starts on this kind of spiritual journey unless there is something in them that craves that and is buying into the idea of the divine in them. Because some of the language that you're using, and I'm thinking about, you know, I have a very traditional Christian background. Some of the language that I know would make a lot of people uncomfortable, or it would at least feel foreign, is the idea of the divine in me.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
As
oh,
opposed
sure.
to mm-hmm. the divine is God.
Out there.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the divine is Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk to people like you, it's this idea of, wait a second, do you actually mean that I am in some way like God? And for those of us that have a really traditional background, it's like, well, that's blasphemy.
That's what that is.
Isn't that a great belief system?
I know, yeah. So I'm really curious, like, you know, you said you kind of come from a Christian background. So what was that transition like for you to go from this idea of, you know, God is something outside of me, far away, disconnected, that I can never achieve, versus, wait a second, maybe that is what I am?
Well, for me, I didn't believe it. I just asked way too many questions, yeah. And after I was told to stop, I just stopped and sucked it up.
Sunday school?
Yeah, because, you know, Dad taught Sunday school, and, you know, Mom and Dad were all about taking us to church, and it wasn't until I graduated and moved to St. Louis that I finally felt free enough to go, I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, and that's probably when I started looking at Buddhism and Hinduism. Mm-hmm. I looked at, you know, doing meditation and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, that was more of a gradual progression of a lot of dabbling. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I didn't really buy into it. It was more annoying to me. And
it never hooked you like it does a lot of people. Yeah.
No, it was just irritated me. And the fact that nobody could answer my questions was even more irritating.
Oh, I love that.
And the fact that they would like look at me like I had four heads when I asked the question, it was like, you know, so it was just reinforcing that something's wrong with me, which I certainly didn't need any help with. You know, I mean, that's an belief system, I think, that's running rampant in all of us. It just has a different way of, you know, stating itself.
So can you talk a little bit about, you know, you kind of talked about from your perspective what's happening when you're working with somebody. What do you hear from your clients? You know, as they're laying there on their table and experiencing and receiving all of this, mm-hmm. what do they usually report?
So depending upon somebody's level of consciousness and how much work they've been doing, a lot of times, sometimes people fall asleep, mm-hmm. and then there's other times where people will, especially like I had a client the other day, we were doing a bunch of inner child work, and I'm like, okay, you've got several inner children here that are at war. So I said, and this was somebody that's experienced, I said, so we need to bring them together and help them release mm-hmm. this programming. And so for me in my inner child work, a lot of times I'll see them with like this little notepad, you know, or they've got a little briefcase or a little bucket, and it's full of all these little, like, I have to be this way and I have to be that way and I don't like this person. And so it's about telling them that, hey, man, you're 55 years old now. That person doesn't live here any longer, and you don't have to be the, and you know, so it's about bringing in your divinity and talking to them. So everybody's experience is a little bit different. The number one experience after the whole session is always everybody feels a lot better. They feel relaxed, they feel calm, they feel centered. They might feel a little loopy, which is when you always give them some chocolate to get them grounded. But generally speaking, people, I don't know that I've ever had a client say, well, I don't feel any different, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They feel something.
Everybody feels something.
I mean,
they always feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, their energy body's been mended. Now it's running efficiently. I mean, so it has a calming effect at the very minimum.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that inner child work sounds a little like what we might do, except we would apply EMDR. We might bring out those children and talk to them, but then do some trauma work.
Yes, yeah, EMDR is so wonderful.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
So what this is making me think of is going back to ancestry and lineage and with our clients at the Bodysmith, we have a lot of community leaders, and I've been involved in a lot of organizations that are looking at improving our community. Springfield, unfortunately, in this area of our state, has a lot of poverty and child abuse.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're talking about changing then. They talk about poverty and child abuse being generations and generations deep and changing that pattern. And, you know, we're looking at, as a community, changing that through credit counseling and awareness of behavior, mental health. But what we need to also be looking at is their spiritual health and being providing access to spiritual healing on a different level.
Mm. Yeah, because they really don't feel empowered. They feel very unworthy. There's so much patterning going on there that they don't even see that there's a way out, you know?
Yeah.
And at that level, there's a book, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but there was a book, one of my friends was a principal, and it looked at socioeconomic levels and how at the lower income, it's all about relationship. And you don't disrespect anybody that you're in relationship with that's in family. If you go outside the tribe, it's very tribal. Mm-hmm. They will do everything in their power to make sure that you do not change. Mm-hmm. And they will keep you in this pattern because, and that's why like low income schools, people that the teachers, unless the teachers connect with these kids on some level, they're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
Because by God, Susie and Ethel are going to be best friends, and I'm going to watch my friend's back before I'm going to do anything else with this teacher, right?
There's a kind of loyalty that happens.
There is a loyalty, and it's all about relationships.
Yeah.
Then you have the middle-income people, and it's all about achievements and goals, right? Yeah. And then you have the wealthy, and it's all about networking.
Mm-hmm.
It's about who you
and
know
accumulation
and working those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So when you understand that at this level where all the abuse is happening, they're all about relationship. It is all about that. It's not about a goal. It's not about a checking account. You have to be able to come to that level to then move them into the direction of coming into deeper responsibility and accountability. These people are they are so much in their victim archetype that they don't know any different.
Hillbilly Elegy, the author talked about.
Yeah.
Is that the book you're trying to think of?
No, that's not the book. It's a different book. But yeah, that's a great book.
He broke out and went to Yale, I believe, or Harvard. I think it was Yale. But he discusses that you don't leave your tribe.
You don't leave the tribe. They will
do
everything.
Then you are shunned.
Yes, you are. And they will do everything to like undermine you, mm-hmm. too. It is difficult. You talk about some tentacles.
But then he talks about having to break into those middle class and high achiever circles, how difficult that is.
Yes, it is.
We have another therapist here that she uses the imagery of crawdads in a bucket to talk about this exact principle.
Exactly.
The minute that one little crawdad gets his claw at the edge of the bucket and is trying to pull himself out, all the other crawdads grab onto him and pull him back down. And that I don't know why, but that imagery I think is so powerful because it's so simplistic and so obvious that this is a life or death situation for them. But there is such an unawareness of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a question that I have. And I know that this is something that we all run into a lot when we're working with people. It's just the struggle to wake up and really be aware of what they are experiencing every day, how intense some of those things are, and just how much that programming is influencing every single thing that we do. That in order to really step into free will, we have to get aware.
And there's an immediate family impact when you start to do that.
Yeah.
You get a consequence.
Yes, which is the crawdads in the bucket problem.
Yeah. Yeah,
that as we wake up, we have relational consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to face those, decide what to
do with
them.
Most people don't have the strength or the resources at that level a lot of times to actually step outside of it. And also remember, so it's really easy to get into the savior, right?
Right.
The rescuer, the Cartman triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Victim, rescuer, persecutor. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
So everybody's got their role, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, that's why I think only certain individuals within each of those socioeconomic structures ever go outside of that is because they've chosen to step outside of that archetype mm-hmm. that's being perpetuated.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, there's very few of them that do that. So there is this honoring of somebody choosing to fill that victim role. If mm-hmm. that's what they came into experience, that's what they came in to experience. We can offer, we can, you know, provide the services, but it's up to them to make the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, when we can, when they feel supported, they have a higher propensity of actually stepping outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody is mm-hmm. going to make that choice.
Right.
And that's okay.
So it's okay on a spiritual level because maybe they came here to experience being the sick person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all contract to have, this is my belief, guys. So, you know, if you believe differently, that's fine. But I chose my mom. I chose my dad, my brother, my sister, all my relatives. I chose every experience that was going on. I deliberately created to be in a middle income family. I firmly believe that the people that are at this low, that came in generationally, you know, at a low income, they chose to have this experience. Everyone is divine. Everything is divine. We are all having our own spiritual experience at the divine level.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to witness many times. But it is about free will and about our own experiences.
And so do you also think we're moving toward something? There's an evolution process?
Oh, there's definitely an evolution happening, even with Mother Earth. You know, her frequency is increasing, her magnetism is decreasing, which is one of the mm-hmm. reasons that we feel like time is speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
Also because we have so much more information coming at us. And we are also, we're so locked into that linear time, you know, that it feels like everything's speeding up. And the reality is that it's not really speeding up. It's just that we're processing a lot more information mm-hmm. in a shorter amount of time. And because of the shifts that are taking place at the Earth level, it seems to be accentuating that. Nyasha Asian did a class on that. She's really wonderful. She talks about crystals. She's very intuitive in that way. So
can you talk for just a minute? Because immediately my mind goes to the downside of the idea that we all choose our own path, right? And because I know what my reaction to that is.
Me too.
Is, well, how can I tell someone that's in an abusive situation that they chose to be there? That feels awful.
Well, you know what? And they're not going to receive it, right?
Right.
Right.
So it's really about the question of, do you want to change it?
Right. And the idea that we chose to start there does not mean that we chose to end there.
Exactly.
That evolution means that we can see this as an opportunity to help each other on that journey of
right.
leaving behind whatever we started with and healing as much as we possibly can in the time that we're given to heal. Because the funny thing is people that often believe in that are also healers, which always mm-hmm. seems like a weird juxtaposition to me. It's like, okay, we believe that we came in here and we chose what we're doing, and yet we also believe that healing is one of the most important things we can do while we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if you kind of have ideas about or thoughts about how that works together or what it means to say to someone, you chose to be here, but let me help you move beyond.
Those things go together in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually I don't, you know, free will is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually I don't talk to somebody about, hey, you made this choice, until they're a little farther on the path mm-hmm. so that they can hear it. Because if I'm telling them that, then they're just going to go, well, you can imagine them, the expletives that are coming forward, right?
Yeah.
And so there's this timing that has to happen and this nurturing, you know, this, do you want to look at this? Do you want to look at that? Here's a book, you know? And a lot of times for people to get out of whatever patterning they're in, a lot of times we have to, especially in this Western society, we need to cultivate that mental body.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people that helped me cultivate the mental body was David Sims. I was working for a copier company, and he came in. And so he told me about Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar and all that kind of thing. And so a lot of times we have to start at that mental level, because it is about, what goals do you have? People at a low socioeconomic level, their goal is to live tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. It's survival.
It's only survival. You know, so how can you talk to them about, you know, are you going to save $5 this week? Are you kidding? I'm not going to save $5. I'm going to go get a soda if I have $5. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So a lot of times we have to start at the mental body before we can ever start getting to the heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to get them into this groove of, I can create what I really want. I'm not a victim all the time.
Which
also, am I answering your question?
Yes.
I don't know that I'm...
Yes, you're also creating a whole lot more, but that's okay.
And I think that also speaks to something that anybody that is in a helping role, or if you're, you know, trying to be on a spiritual path yourself, is this idea that we can always just take the next step, that if we look too far beyond, too far down the road, it is so overwhelming and hard to imagine ourselves ever being at that place that it's pretty paralyzing. You know, if somebody had told me even a year ago where I would be at this point, not only would I have a hard time believing it, but it would have been anxiety provoking and unhelpful.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than, you know, looking too far down the road, if we focus on what is coming, you know, the next step, the next action mm-hmm. step that we can take, for a lot of us, that is much more approachable, and we can begin to move a lot faster because we're not overwhelming ourselves with the what ifs and how do I handle it when and all of that.
Like mm-hmm. jumping from depression to exuberance, that's too
far.
A leap.
Yeah.
But going from depression into anger, that's a good thing.
It's a really good thing. I mean, if you guys have studied Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham,
right.
I mean,
it's
they do deliberate intention, right? Yeah. Where they give you this little grid or the scale, exactly, where it's like, yeah, if you can move from depression to anger, woohoo!
Yeah.
You just went up the grid, man.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's true. I mean,
it is good.
People are more empowered when they're pissed
That's
off
right.
than they are when they're in despair.
That's right. Because when you're angry, you're probably going to do something, right?
Yeah. And I see this with worthiness too, right? So if our ultimate goal for people is to be able to say and really feel in their gut that it's true, that I am perfectly acceptable and lovable the way that I am today, right? Moving from I'm a piece of crap and totally worthless to that statement is way too huge. And so sometimes we have to like hang out in the gap with really little incremental movements, like maybe I am as good as a lot of other people. Right?
Exactly.
Like maybe just that. Maybe, you know, we're just taking the next little step to see, and then we don't even have to declare it true. Let's just experiment with what would it be like to consider that could be true. And that's so important, because our brains can only, well, and maybe it's even more than that, we can only integrate so much shift at a time.
Yeah.
And so sometimes those shifts feel so tiny.
Click by click.
Yeah, click by click. And watching somebody go through that is really, really slow. And I think, you know, you used the word honor earlier, and I have to use that language with myself a lot about honoring people's process, no matter how slow it is, and not trying to jump ahead of them to mm-hmm. somewhere that they're not ready to go. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you. We have more questions.
I know.
Listeners can find you on Facebook at Lisa Zibel Oneness Now.
Mm-hmm.
Any other social media that you're on, Lisa?
There's going to be a website called Springfield Connections, in which a bunch of healers are going to be on that website. A gal by the name of Katie Watson is putting that together. And so eventually It's under construction right now.
All right. Well, when it's ready, we'll have a link in our show notes for you. And we really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you again for joining us here at Reconceive, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to Reconceive. Don't forget to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. Follow us at Reconceive Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, and find us on our website at beyondstudio417.com/reconceive. And if anything you've heard today has made you wonder if it's time to reach out for help, please don't ignore that. Message us for assistance in finding a qualified therapist in your area. We would enjoy helping you in that way. From all of us here at Reconceive, see you next time.